News reports have come out about how the Israeli military has been destroying water facilities in Gaza. One video shows Israeli soldiers planting explosives inside and around water pumps of a facility in the occupied city of Rafah with a caption that says, "Destruction of the Tal Sultan Water Reservoir in honor of Shabbat." The video ends with footage of the water facility being blown up. Mazin Kumsie is a professor at Bethlehem University and the founding director of the Palestine Institute of Biodiversity and Sustainability. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg.
The Israeli attacks on the water facilities in Gaza, is that something they've done before? Is that kind of one of their routine tactics, or is this something new?
No, it's part and parcel of the system of apartheid and colonization that they have established from the beginning, actually even before the foundation of the State of Israel. The first water projects that were planned and done in the 1920s and 30s under the British mandate, and under, of course, the British mandate was initially set up to help the Zionist movement set up a Jewish homeland per the Balfour Declaration. So from that period in the 1920s, they started projects like the diversion of water from Lake Tiberias and also draining the wetlands of the Hula area. These were very important areas, of course, for Palestinian communities. The idea behind these water projects, if you want to call them, is to deprive the indigenous people of water and hence make it unlivable for them so that they leave. Water is life, so the idea of depriving local people of water is typical of ideas of colonization and moving people out, basically. So this continued, of course, from that early period on through 1948 and then 1967 when Israel occupied the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The first military order issued for the West Bank was actually related to water, which is to say that no Palestinian can dig a water well or engage in any activity that affects water issues after June 1967 without permission from the Israeli occupiers. And this water military order still stands today, so that you cannot even collect rainwater in most areas of the West Bank. Again, the idea is to deprive Palestinians of water. And this was studied well by human rights organizations like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, who wrote as late as 2022 about water apartheid and how it works. And B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights organization, also wrote in detail about water apartheid and attempts to strangulate Palestinian water supply. This was well before this latest conflagration in the Gaza Strip, and we can talk about what Israel has done in the Gaza Strip.
So are you saying that the Palestinians in Gaza didn't have an adequate water supply even before this latest assault?
Yes. Yeah, the coastal aquifer, which Gaza sits on top of, before October 7, actually 2 decades before, Israel blocked the water runoff into the aquifer itself from the Wadi that used to come from the Hebron Mountains through Wadi Gaza to the coast. And so this dried up the aquifer itself. Well, not completely, but it diminished replenishment of the water aquifer. And because of the increased usage in Gaza, driven, of course, by a population explosion in Gaza, because 70% of the people in Gaza don't belong in Gaza, actually. They are refugees from 1948. So this increased population reaching by 2023, 2.3 million people, of which 70% are refugees from 1948, So their extraction obviously increased, while the replenishment of the water aquifer decreased. So there was significant water shortage in Gaza, and Israel was supposed to allocate some water to Gaza Strip per the Oslo Accords, which Israel used as a kind of a leverage on Gaza. Sometimes they turned on the faucet, sometimes they didn't turn on the faucet. So before October 7, 2023, there was significant water shortage, and the UN itself did a study in 2013 in which they said that by 2020, Gaza will be unlivable because of water and other issues.
What is this meant for the health of people in Gaza?
Right. So water issues, of course, you know, water is life for cleanliness. And water, in the wider sense, includes also like sewage treatment facilities. All water infrastructure is usually included in water aspects. And this has been devastating in Gaza before October 7, but certainly accelerated after October 7, when Israel, Israeli government very clearly said, like the minister of defense, Israeli army, went on TV and said, we will not allow water, food, medicine, fuel, or anything into Gaza because we're not dealing with humans, we're dealing with human animals. And that's what it did immediately after October 7. They started bombing sewage treatment facilities. They cut off electricity and fuel supplies. And of course, you cannot operate water pumping station, even from the diminishing aquifer, without electricity. And you cannot operate the desalination plants. There were desalination plants in Gaza. You cannot operate them before without electricity. But Israel also intentionally bombed those facilities. And the BBC report shows that as of May, essentially half the infrastructure of water was destroyed. And the other half, of course, most of it is unusable, as I said, because there's no fuel, no electricity for pumping stations.
So is water getting in from the outside with the few supplies that are being allowed in? Is water included in that?
Very, very limited. The estimate is about 5% of the pre-October 7 amount of water. And the pre-October 7 amount of water was only about 50% of Gaza's needs. So it's very, very minimal water that comes in on trucks. Many trucks carry water bottles and things like that. And then people use the water from the sea basically for like washing clothes if they are next to the sea. But the effect of this has been, I mean, we can talk about just the health effects. For example, my background is medicine, medical genetics. According to the World Health Organization and the United Nations, including UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Work Agency, and many other NGOs dealing with water issues, the situation of water and hygiene in Gaza, and especially the runoff of sewage that's untreated and puddling in the streets and stuff like that, this has caused a basic health catastrophe that, you know, there's an estimate of close to 1 million Gazans that have medical conditions related to this, like skin infections, even smallpox, and lung infections, intestinal disorders, and now, of course, spread of
this. In addition to all the people killed and wounded.
There's actually estimates, according to a Lancet published study, that more people now died out of these illnesses and lack of medical treatments, also for injuries, than those directly killed by the bombing, which is about 39,000 Palestinians who were killed directly by the bombing. So, yeah, the smallpox, for example, is now spreading in Gaza. As you know, smallpox was pretty much eliminated globally thanks to a campaign that was, I mean, not smallpox, but polio, I'm sorry. Polio is resurging in Gaza. Even the Israeli army admitted this and said they want to protect their soldiers, so they want to vaccinate their soldiers against polio. But polio was pretty much eliminated around the world following the invention of the vaccine for it in the mid-20th century by Salk and others. And Rotary Club, which I am a member of, distributed vaccines around the world, $2 billion worth of vaccines. Eliminated polio pretty much. There was a couple of cases in Afghanistan, I think in 2022, and in Somalia. But pretty much 2022, there were just a few incidents of polio globally. And now there is an epidemic of it in Gaza Strip. So this is all related to water issues and to hygiene and sewage treatment issues. So it's devastating. I mean, environmentally also, the damage in Gaza is just beyond description.
And what do you see happening in the next few months or after this Israeli war is over?
We are doing some studies now with the limited resources we have, including remote sensing, to judge, for example, the level of green covers left in Gaza. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of data needs to be gathered to basically comment on whether some areas of damage may not be recoverable. And I say this with hesitation because, as I said, we don't have enough data. Well, I'll give you an example. I'm not sure the water aquifer is recoverable, the coastal water aquifer, because Israel also flooded the tunnels that Hamas built with seawater, and that, of course, seeps into the aquifer. So you have increased salinity of the aquifer, and I'm not sure if there's any technical solution to this problem, among other problems, the pollution that is produced by the bombing, white phosphorus, depleted uranium, explosions that leave residues in the water. And of course, the rain comes and washes all of these things into the water aquifer. So my guess is, if I was a betting man, I would say, it's only 20 or 30% chance that the water aquifer is recoverable in the coastal water aquifer.
And then the Israelis are going to try to resettle some of the area?
They say this, but, you know, the Israeli settlers and leaders of the settler movements, like Ben Gvir and Smotrich, they say this and they want to ethnically cleanse Gaza and unsettle it. But, you know, these are not exactly highly educated people who study environmental issues or study health issues or anything like that. So they base their judgments on just emotions and racism, basically. And
they think God will protect them or whatever.
Yeah, God will clear everything, clear the people, and reclaim the land, so to speak. They use the word cleansing, you know, cleansing the land of the indigenous people and of all the other obstacles to their progress as a chosen people. That's how they think. So it's not based on science or knowledge or techniques. I mean, Israel, in its beginning, used to have what I call rational scientific colonization, like Ben-Gurion. Ben-Gurion once used that term, scientific colonization. But now I don't think they do that anymore. Israeli leaders, as you see, like Netanyahu and Ben-Gvir and Smotrich and people like that, are not rational. They are irrational polemics and hatred-driven nonsense, you know, not really based on even what's in the interests of Zionism.
Do you think that the early leaders like Ben-Gurion, if they were alive now, they would say, oh, this is too much. We can't sustain this, you know? Or do you think they would kind of do the same thing the current leaders are doing?
Well, about 20 years ago, as I saw the rise of the right wing in Israel, fascist parties in Israel, I wrote that if Ben-Gurion was alive then, this is 20 years ago, it's even worse now. But if Ben-Gurion was alive and ran for elections, his party wouldn't gather one seat in the Knesset. They would be considered, like merits or to the left of that even.
Anything else you want to add to what you've said?
No, I mean, I think, you know, the issues of environment and health and water issues and stuff like that are ignored in the Western media, unfortunately. And, you know, it's understandable. People want to focus on blood and gore and babies being blown to bits, so to speak. But I am not sure if it's more cruel to blow babies with bombs, 2,000-pound bombs, than to starve them to death or make them go thirsty to death. I think that's a more cruel way of dying when you don't have milk for babies, and babies are literally dying because their mothers cannot nurse them, because their mothers don't produce milk, because their mothers cannot drink, cannot eat, except a little flour. Sometimes they give them, they let through some trucks of flour.
Do you get the impression that environmentalists around the world are speaking out against war making precisely because of what you're talking about, the destruction it does?
I would hope so. Most of them are silent, unfortunately. Part of it is our fault. We're not informing them. We're not educating. We don't have the capacities that the Zionists have of public relations and media. And so we don't have the ability to put out the message with these facts, because sometimes, I mean, I know from my own work, it works if you reach out to them, because they may not care about Palestinians dying, but they do care about the environment. And when you explain to them, for example, that impacts their environment, for example, the greenhouse gases that the Israeli military is dumping into the air, just in the first 2 months of this war on Gaza, just from flying jets, 254,000 sorties in the first 2 months, Israel produced more greenhouse gases, again, just from the jet fuel only, not the bombs or anything else, more than the Central African Republic produced in a whole year of kitchens and industries and everything else. This is a study from the experts hired by the Guardian newspaper. And this was the first 2 months, and we are now in the 10th month. So Israel must have produced more greenhouse gases from jets flying than the country of France or England produced of greenhouse gases in a whole year. And if you explain this to people and you show them the data, yes, they are influenced to start acting, but we need much more information like that to be disseminated.
That's Bethlehem University professor Mazin Kumsieh speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on August 8th, 2024.